Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. As we continue in this Gosho, I'm reminded, and this Gosho will touch on this, that we all come to Buddhism in our own, of course, it's obvious, we all come to Buddhism in our own way, right? Our own path, as it were. But to dig that, I don't want to make value judgments here per se. I think that karmically, we come to our own realizations and ultimately our exposure to Shakyamuni's teachings through avenues that are specific to our ability, our capacity, our path, our karmic momentum to engage with the Buddhist teachings. Okay, and if you can get a sense of what I'm trying to, or what I'm about to say here, that some of us have done a lot of independent study on our own, research through our childhood exposures, depending on what our families do, our environs, right? We're very influenced in samsara by our environment, which is ours uniquely. And so how you respond to those influences changes the way you move through them, past them, around them, whatever. For me, for instance, I'll just throw myself on the table. I was born French Canadian, which obviates Catholicism, but it's a very old Catholicism. It's not New Agey or newfound or what you might say a blue jean Bible kind of thing. It's ancient. It's from Europe and transplanted to Montreal and 800 years of history in Canada before. These ideas are just inculcated deeply into the culture, I'll say that. And so a lot of it doesn't seem so shocking or surprising because it's just that deeply ingrained. Whereas, you know, the United States is a young country, relatively speaking. And for a lot of people, they came to Christianity through a very kind of New Agey kind of sensibility and the way they apply their lives to. Anyway, I don't want to make this video about Catholicism. All of that is to say that very early on, I started to question a lot of the things that the church was saying, the books were written, and I was an avid researcher of another way to go, because raised as I was in the environment that I was, you had to believe in something. So if not Catholicism, then what? So I studied at a very young age, all kinds of mind things. Mind over matter was something I was very hung up on as a preteen. Things like Kabbalah, you know, God is a verb. And of course, it also was my karma to find the books that I did, right? I studied a lot of philosophy from, Nietzsche, obviously, but came to Michel Foucault, who had a very interesting historiology, I'll call it, of the world, the species of man, and the things that moved cultural, governmental control. It became very early on very interesting to me that these religious practices were actually kind of a fabric, a network, a matrix, there's the word, of populist control, societal control, governance. And that's very interesting as I grow older and find that, as I study Nietzsche, for instance, this is a shogunate, a very samurai, very deeply authoritarian society, right? To this day. And that seemed to go hand in hand with these religious organizations, because that's what they are, right? We want to talk about religion like it's something mystical, and it becomes magical because a lot of what is eschewed in language is very abstract and magical. It has no, it's a real stretch for somebody to take that magical wording and shoehorn it into daily life. But this is the business of religion. It's a business. And this is, until I came to Buddhism and I studied with different books and different teachers. And then I got involved with an organization that was growing rapidly. And I learned a lot there, but not long after I started to learn a lot, the structure, the organizational structure is so palpable that I just, every fiber in my body just pushed that away, kind of rebelled against it right away. Because to me, the purity of what the human mind is doing and how it's doing it is the only reason to have beliefs. So for me, it was pretty early on when I got involved, and then I would see them self-destruct with arguments between temple and lay organization, and it's not just one brand. There's a lot of brands, and then you could see that breakdown in the structure also exists within the organizations, not just the organizations, lay organizations, I mean to say, but within the temple, the Buddhist order, this gravitation toward authoritarianism. This is ours, and it's better than theirs. And we only can say whether you're doing it good or you're doing it wrong. And it goes even to Nichiren, right? Nichiren just lambasting all of these other sects around him. And but here's the unique difference with Nichiren. And I think this is a critical point. Whenever Nichiren is, whether he's talking to a lay believer, right, or a ruler, somebody in charge of the governance of the country, where, again, Buddhism is deeply intertwined, just as Muslim and Islam is deeply intertwined in the Arab states, certainly Israel, right? A lot of people are naming themselves things that they truly don't even understand how that name comes about or what they're claiming. But that's a whole other video. My point here is that Nichiren always points out that it's the Lotus Sutra, Shakyamuni's teaching, Lotus Sutra, that is correct, that is verifiably correct, not Nichiren. So I resist the idea that we practice Nichiren Buddhism, because it's not Nichiren Buddhism. It's Nichiren's teaching of the Lotus Sutra Buddhism. Do you see what I'm saying? We get caught up ourselves with the idea of hierarchies and authoritarian regimes. But this Buddhism is anything but authoritarian, because it's about you. It's not telling you how to practice directly. It's saying you find your path to how to practice, the ultimate method of which is Myoho Renge Kyo. It'll work for anyone. It's universal. There is no one who owns it or disseminates it or claims to be the end-all be-all of Myoho Renge Kyo. It's simply Myoho Renge Kyo. And you, by practicing this method and studying, will come to that through your own individual path. It's individual. It's not groupthink. It's not social think. Do you see how this, really, if you study and you practice Myoho Renge Kyo, you come to find, maybe right away, maybe it takes years, that this practice stands in complete opposition to all of these other, everything else looks meandering. It may sound confusing, I think as it applies to this video, certainly, and what I'm trying to do with this channel, is to a couple of things. First of all, emphatically, this is your practice, and this is your awakening to your Buddha, because that Buddha is you. It is simply clarity of mind, clarity of thinking, living this life, as brief as it is, fully expressed without causing harm. It's just it's like two sides of the same coin. If you live this life to its fullest potential, how could it be destructive? It's as simple as that. Yeah, oh yeah, simple. Okay, so it's your practice. But also, please remember in that statement that the other side of that statement is no one can impose their will on your enlightenment. No one can awaken you for you. No one can hold that back from you and say, no, you have to pass these hurdles and do this test and then you can have a mandala. No, the mandalas existed just as long as Buddha has existed. And if you're familiar with scripture or the word I'm looking for, I'm getting senile, folks, sutras, right? Read what Nichiren says about it. Read what Tendai says about it. Read what Nagarjuna says about it. All of these scholars, these bodhisattvas, are repeating the same thing that Shakyamuni taught. Right? This is timeless. It's always been here. It's in you. It's in you. It's part of you. You just simply need to express it. So how can anyone hold that away from you? Right? This mandala that Nichiren created of the Myoho Rengekyo, the Lotus Sutra, is the expression of Buddha. And how long has Buddha been here? It's not Shakyamuni. That's a label of a Buddha. That's Shakyamuni Buddha. I'm Sylvain Buddha. You're Bob Buddha. John Buddha. Betty Buddha. That was kind of funny. Joan Buddha. Whatever. Okay? It's not that Buddha is a thing. It's an expression, clearly unfolded, complete expression of your life, of the life process. This is where it goes beyond you. Because once you understand what you actually are, how you actually live, you also discover how everything lives. Right? To greatly, almost criminally, minimize the or shrink this down, that's an easier way to say it, is I heard people talking about brain freeze a long time before I ever understood what it was. And then one day I was just shoveling, maybe it was a milkshake. I don't think it was scooped ice cream. I think I just was really thirsty, and I got my favorite malt vanilla shake, and I just threw that down my gullet to the point where suddenly I felt like I was shocked with what I got, frostbite. And I felt it in my throat, my mouth. It was like I was going numb. And then it happened. It went into my head. It was like my brain suddenly swole to a quarter size larger than it could fit in my skull. I got brain freeze. And the moment I got brain freeze and realized that I got brain freeze, I suddenly understood what everyone was experiencing. Not that I'd never experienced it before, but I never experienced it in those terms. So you see how this is very super simplified. But just because we know a term and exchange it with each other doesn't mean we understand it. We human beings in samsara must experience something before it gels. This is why your attitude when you chant, your mandala, the way you treat it, the way you sincerely commit yourself to your Buddha nature is 90% of the game. The game being life. We can all walk through all manner of organization and rituals and habits and all that, and never really perceive or experience to fruition the actual depth of meaning in what we're doing. So, with all of that, blah, 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 this very next sentence, you'll understand why I brought this up for this video and this Go show. Nichiren continues. The Buddhist teachings that have been disseminated by others are, in all cases, those that have been learned and received from their respective teachers. This is why I say karma. Your karma is definitely involved in your interrelationships, yes? He goes on. It is like the case of fiefs possessed by immediate vassals of the ruling house of Kamakura, or estates administered by the stewards of the districts. Though their lands may measure no more than one or two cho, in all cases they received them through the favor of the late shogun. How much more indebted to him are those whose holdings measure 100 cho, 1,000 cho, a whole province, or two whole provinces? Attachments, right? To lineage. One who carries on the doctrines of a good teacher is called a worthy. One who realizes the truth for oneself without the aid of a teacher is called a sage. In the lands of India, China, and Japan, since the passing of the Buddha, there have been two sages. They were Tendai and Dengyo. These two men deserve to be called sages. They also deserve to be called worthies. The great teacher Tendai carried on the doctrines of Nanhue. In that sense, he was a worthy, but he also realized the supreme vehicle of Buddhahood by himself at the place of meditation. In this sense, he was a sage. Similarly, the great teacher Dengyo received instruction in the teachings on the practice of concentration and insight, and on the great precepts of perfect and immediate enlightenment from his teachers, Dao Cui and Xing Man. In that sense, he was a worthy. But even before he journeyed to China, while still in Japan, he had already understood and mastered all the doctrines of the true word and concentration and insight Tendai schools without aid of a teacher. He had come to realize that the wisdom of the Tendai school surpassed that of the 6 or 7 schools. In this sense, he was a sage. So it is that one of the Confucian classics declares, quote, "Those who are born with an understanding of this are the highest." Highest indicates a sage. Those who study and thereby reach this understanding are the next. Next indicates a worthy. And one of the Buddhist sutras contains the passage, quote, "In my religious practices, I am without the aid of a teacher," end quote. Shakyamuni, the Lord of Teachings, is the foremost sage of this Saha world. Tendai and Dengyo were both sages as well as worthies. Ashvaghosha and Nagarjuna, Asanga and Vasubandhu, and Lao Tzu and Confucius were all both sages and worthies of either the Hinayana teachings, the provisional Mahayana teachings, or the non-Buddhist teachings. However, none of them was a sage or worthy of the Lotus Sutra. Now, I am neither a sage nor a worthy man. I neither adhere to the precepts, nor am I without precepts. I neither possess wisdom nor lack it. Nevertheless, I was born some 2,220 years after the Buddha's passing, in the last 500-year period, when the Daimoku of the Lotus Sutra is destined to be spread. Before any other person of the various schools, whether here in Japan or in the far-off lands of India and China, could begin to invoke the Daimoku, I began chanting Namo Myoho Renge Kyo in a loud voice and have continued to do so for more than 20 years. During that time, I've been cursed and beaten and at times have sustained injury. Twice I've been exiled, once I was condemned to death, and the other great trials that I have suffered are too numerous to mention. I've been like a soybean tossed into a large pot of boiling water, or a large fish in a tiny puddle. The Lotus Sutra says, quote, since hatred and jealousy toward the Sutra abound even when the Thus Come One is in the world, how much more will this be so after his passing, end quote. It also states, quote, it will face much hostility in the world and be difficult to believe, end quote. And it says, quote, there will be many ignorant people who will curse and speak ill of us and will attack us with swords and staves, with rocks and tiles, quote, dot, 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 again and again, we will be banished, end quote. If I, Nichiren, had not been born in the land of Japan, then these passages of the sutra would have been mere words on the Buddha's part. Empty of all significance, they would have been like blossoms that open but from no fruit, or form no fruit, or like thunder that rumbles but never ushers in rain. These golden words of the Buddha would have been in vain, and the Lotus Sutra, which speaks honestly, would have been found to be tainted with great falsehoods. When I consider all this, it seems to me that I must equal the sages Tendai and Dengyo, and that I stand above Lao Tzu and Confucius. So you see how he accepts his role in Buddhism as a humble man whose karma placed him in the right time and the right place to have the elucidations and the realizations that he has. And because that's foretold in, at his time, 2,200 years after the Buddha's passing, predicted by his teachings, he has to take responsibility for it. And he has to commit to it and be willing to do so because it is the time and the place. Have you noticed that there's a very consistent theme in all of the sutras about the capacity and the time? Right? They can't turn away from that. In this entire country of Japan, I am the only one who has been chanting Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. He's speaking as a teacher here. Obviously, he has many followers, but publicly, all of them have to hide and not be too loud because the samurai will behead them or take all their stuff, their land, their family, so on and so forth, their rank, their job. It's a very scary time. So Nichiren is the only one standing out loud and proclaiming this teaching, right? Today we don't have it so tough. People may ridicule us, but that's on them, right? And we don't have government coming down on our heads for what we believe in, what we do, because we don't harm others. So we don't break any laws, right? All right. I am like the single speck of dust that marks the beginning of Mount Sumeru, or the single drop of dew that spells the start of a great ocean. Probably 2 people, 3 people, 10 people, 100 people will join in chanting it until it spreads to 1 province, 2 provinces, and all the 66 provinces of Japan, and reaches even to the 2 islands of Iki and Tsushima. Those persons who have spoken slanderously of me will in time chant in the same way, and everyone from the ruler on down to the multitude of common people will, as described in the Supernatural Powers chapter of the Lotus Sutra, chant Namu Myō Rengekyō with a single voice. Itai Doshin, right? Though the trees may desire to be still, the wind will not cease to blow. Though we may wish for spring to linger, it must give way to summer. Though the people of Japan think highly of the Lotus Sutra because of their animosity toward me, the priest Nichiren, the monk Nichiren, they refuse to chant Namu Myō Rengekyō. But when invaders from the great kingdom of the Mongols strike once or twice again, as they did at Iki and Tsushima, attacking and killing the men and taking the women prisoners, when they battle their way as far as the capital of Kyoto and the city of Kamakura, seizing the sovereign himself along with his ministers and 100 officials, flinging them in the dirt before their oxen and horses, and violently abusing them, how then will the people of Japan be able to keep from chanting Namu Myō Rengekyō? In the past, when I was struck several times in the face with the 5th scroll of the Lotus Sutra, I felt no resentment at it. In fact, I was actually delighted, for to be attacked in the manner described is the never disparaging chapter, to suffer assault as predicted in the encouraging devotion chapter is indeed a high and precious honor. Interesting. But how vexing such attacks must be to Brahma, Chakra, the deities of the sun and moon, and the 4 heavenly kings who inscribed an oath in the presence of Buddha that they would not permit evil men to strike the votary of the Lotus Sutra. It would be no small matter if those who slander me were to fail to incur punishment from the heavenly deities in their present existence. Not only will those deities who fail to punish them will be destroyed throughout past, present, and future, but even now, the Buddhas are surely taking an account of their actions, and when that happens, it will be no fault of Nichiren's. Rather, by siding with those monks who slander the correct teaching, they are summoning great disaster upon themselves. In view of all this, your sincerity in sending a gift of 5 strings of blue duck coins whenever the opportunity arises truly entitles you to be known as one who propagates the Daimoku of the Lotus Sutra in Japan. As first one person, then 2 persons, then 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, and then all the people throughout the country come to chant the Daimoku, before you know it, their blessings will accrue to you. This is something I was explaining recently, right? How can the cause we make toward our own enlightenment not affect our entire environment? We are a synergistic, we perceive ourselves as separate because that's samsara. That's the state our mind lives in. But it doesn't have to, because the actual state of enlightenment, awakening, is discovering that we are not separated. There's been some recent science about a particle called a muon. You can look that up. I don't know how interested you might be in science or averse to it. I don't know. But suffice it to say, there are particles. There are, and understand, a particle is a definition of energy, a state of energy. And that, call it a particle if you will, is so minute that it actually permeates, permeates may not even be the right word. You've heard this story since high school science, these particles that go right through us and the earth and just sail right through. I mean, a photon of light, you turn a flashlight on and it hits a wall and it ends. These particles are smaller than those particles of light. They go right through the wood, right through the insulation, right through the drywall, and then the paint and everything else. They just sail along. Because mostly is space. But space, we're finding out in science now, isn't empty either. So think of that on a little bit larger scale, if you will. The air you're breathing is molecular. It's actually a lot of mass. We're just a vehicle that knows how to use that and make energy, transform that energy into something else. Bioelectric force, chi, right? This is how we build the cells in our bodies. From our bone marrow, which has the information on what cells are needed to be replaced. Our entire body is replaced within about 7 years at different rates. We have a new liver, a new heart, a new brain every 7 years. Doesn't feel that way because these are very incremental little changes, right? But nobody denies that when they look at back at their lives 10, 20 years ago, they are completely different people. But that's because we keep every moment, we keep replacing ourselves with memory and motion and kinetics. Karma, right? So if you're achieving your maximal potential, how can you not be radiating that to your environment and others of humans and everything else? So it's inevitable. Those blessings will be like the drops of dew that gather to form a great ocean, or the specks of dust that pile up to become Mount Sumeru. This is what he's talking about. The 10 demon daughters, in particular, have vowed to protect those who embrace the Daimoku of the Lotus Sutra. It would follow that these deities must look upon you, the Honorable Myomitsu, and your wife as a mother who looks upon an only child. They will prize you as a yak cherishes its own tail and watch over you day and night. How reassuring, how encouraging. There is much more that I would like to say, but I do not have time to go into detail. Please explain these things carefully to your wife. I do not write these words merely to flatter. The more gold is heated in the flames, the brighter will be its color. The more sword is whetted, and sharper, the sharper it will become. And the more one praises the blessings of the Lotus Sutra, the more one's own blessings will be increased. Bear in mind that the 28 chapters of the Lotus Sutra contain only a few passages elucidating the truth, but a great many words of praise. Nichiren. I hope that you find tremendous encouragement in this, Gosho. I know for me, it recalled a lot of moments of clarity and realizations in my samsaric life. Enough so that even though out of disgust with some organizations, I, my practice took quite a hit and I wasn't, I never let it go. I never stopped practicing, but I didn't practice as fervently. I felt like a prize fighter who'd suddenly be hit by a punch that he didn't expect. And I was just sitting there on the canvas, contemplating how I could go on. And, you know, finally got off the canvas. This practice is just too amazing. I started reading again, studying, And that gave me inspiration, made me feel stronger, upped my practice, more Daimoku, more Gongyo. And once again, was able to feel that incredible sense of life that I could never back down again. It would be ridiculously self-destructive of me to do so. So I hope you get that kind of courage as you continue to practice. It's taken me a long time. Don't begrudge your difficulties. They're just your karma working itself out. Keep chanting. Do that. And I promise you, this stuff will work out. Namo Myoho-renge-kyo. Deeply, deeply appreciate your participation. Any support you can offer, Patreon, look at the cards on this video, beginning and end. You'll have avenues to support. Watching this video is supporting me, although my channel is demonetized, of course, so I don't get any payoff for, but please, your interaction speaks to me, because I see the likes, I see the comments. That keeps our sangha growing, and that's everything, right? And don't forget the audio files, right? The Buddha podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. You can download them and listen to them anytime. And with that, I will let you go, and I'll see you in the next one. Thanks for being here. Take care of your health.